Hello, good evening, and welcome to the photo show. As you can see, I am not Ewan Rankin. Unfortunately, Ewan is not able to join us at the moment, so the three of us has decided to try and step in and do some kind of partial imitation of the photo show. So please bear with us. I'm a rank amateur, so luckily I'm joined by some expert photographers tonight. We have Damien and we have Ian, both of whom have been submitting some excellent photographs and images to the Slack room that we're all in and to the wider world. So it'll be a slightly change. We're going to try and keep to the format, but we're not, as I said, I'm certainly not as technical as you, and so we'll avoid trying to get too technical. And unfortunately, we haven't got any Q&As tonight. So we're going to do a little bit about news, a bit about kit, and then we're going to have a conversation about a subject that has raised and come up over the last few weeks in lockdown. So let's start off with a bit of news about the new Sony camera. So do you want to give us a bit on that, please, Ian?
Yeah, so Sony released a new camera. It's the Sony ZV-1. And, I'm not going to go into the technical side of it, but this is a camera that Sony have clearly decided they want to aim at the V-logging market, if you like, because that market's just exploding, and it's almost as if now if you're releasing a small sort of mirrorless camera and you're not putting a tilty, flippy screen on it, people aren't interested. So it's interesting to see that these manufacturers now they're aiming their cameras at this market. I've got a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old, and they're when they've got these little VTech cameras, and they're always pretending that they're making a YouTube video, and Ewan's mentioned the millions, billions of uploads a day, so that market is massive, and it's interesting to see manufacturers are completely aiming at that market now. And it caused a bit of a stir when Sony released it over the last week or so. I think it will be a hit price wise. I think $799. Shipping on June the 11th, so it looks like a nice bit of kit. As I say, purely aimed at that market, which is interesting.
These are really good cameras that they're putting forward, Ian. I mean, they can do a good job at taking a photograph in their own right, not just for blogging.
Yeah, definitely.
This isn't the first. There's been a few over the last 6 months, 12 months have started to go down that route.
As I say, I mean, it's almost frowned upon now if we're not putting, a flippy screen on a camera now. The Fuji XT3s and all those sort of cameras now, that £700 to £1,000 bracket seems to be really aimed now at, people making, video diaries, if you like, for YouTube. See a lot of the photographers that are making these videos using these cameras. Sony are recognising that as a market, and they're going purely for it with this camera. And with Sony's reputation of image quality and video quality, this is going to sell well, I think.
Okay. Canon had one. Canon was the one that really took off, and I think Sony must be.
Yeah, so M40 or M50 or something like that.
It was one of the Canons, and that's fired them up. And of course, the Sony, the Sony RX100 is a very good little camera as well for this sort of thing.
And are they going to take video in landscape, or are we going to have everything horrible portrait?
Well, it's naturally in landscape, actually, I think. Good. Probably a good thing. Yeah, definitely for you,
yeah.
Anyway.
But watching all the blanked out screens either side, let me go into that sort of mode. Let me do that. Oh, this is a video. It really gets up my nose. Sorry. Okay. Now the other thing that we were talking about earlier on was the Vivo X50, Damien. You mentioned this.
I picked this one up, and I was looking at the website. The Vivo X50, a small Chinese firm, not small, but a little known one, and it's party trick. It's got four cameras on the rear, And the main lens has a 48 megapixel sensor with a maximum f1.6 aperture. And what's really amazing is that it can do four axis image stabilization that boasts giving super smooth video akin to using a gimbal stabilizer. So, I mean, Ian's just gone on to the fact that we've got these amazing cameras being used for the vlogging. And then you've got one of these that can do amazing stuff if you're going down the street, walking along, doing video conversations with people. It will just look really smooth and there won't be any sort of stuttering or juddering of the camera.
Yeah. And there seems to be a common trend that they want to put as many lenses as they can on the back of a phone now. I think we're up to four. Next five, six, where, you know, will the whole of the back of the camera end up just a load of lenses, like a spider's eye with all these different lenses on it? Apparently, I was reading an article that said that apparently if you cover over one of the lenses on the X11, it doesn't make any slight difference anyway. The picture seems to be taken. This is meant to be the telephoto lens, and it doesn't seem to be actually doing anything. So it'd be interesting to play around with that.
What I find interesting with this is, you know, as a photographer, you know, a few years ago, I was probably thinking, well, it's all right because a mobile phone's not going to replace, you know, a nice 1.8 lens or f2 lens where you can throw the background out of focus and do a lovely portrait. And then all of a sudden, you know, Apple, Samsung come along with portrait mode and you're seeing what they're doing, what they can't physically do with a lens, they're doing with software, and the results are incredible. So, you know, as photographers, I think we sometimes are guilty of sort of sitting, well, you know, these phones won't replace our cameras or the stuff that our a decent digital SLR can do, but within a few years, it's constantly moving along and it's incredible. And, you know, I think, well, Martin, you've got a story coming on, up about Nikon. And
yeah, I was just saying that.
This just goes to show this, you know, this is where their market's going.
So, Ian, yeah, you mentioned there about the Nikon issue. It was an article that I saw earlier today. And the headline banner, which attracted my attention, was that it said Nikon is no longer primarily a camera company, which struck me as quite strange, as I didn't know what else Nikon did. There may be something in the medical field or stuff like that they're involved with. But they have announced horrendous results for this year for the camera division. And I think they're also having problems transitioning from the old F mount to the new digital one that they're trying to use. But as I said, but my point was, what else do Nikon do? Have you guys ever come across other field? And if it does mean that they may close down the camera division, does that hand everything to Canon?
Canon and Sony.
Yeah. But there's no one else really in that high end professional market, is there?
Becoming more niche, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, Damon. Go on.
They do healthcare. I've just done a search. They do healthcare. So they do microscopy in healthcare and science. So that's their business, not just the camera business.
Right.
They do. I've just looked at our business is they do healthcare business and their products. Yes. Ophthalmology. So interesting that they do other things. And I'm sure that some people probably send us a post after this and tell us what they do.
It's just I can't recall seeing Nikon, the logo, on many other items as you go around. You know, you go into hospitals, you often see the see Canon and other Fuji and other pieces on pieces of equipment, but I've not particularly noticed Nikon. So, but that's a worrying sign. They're saying that the COVID has actually had a devastating effect on their business for this year. And there's real worries about the camera division being able to carry on with the work he wants to do.
Yeah, I think the problem is, you know, coronavirus has come along at a point, you know, where the likes of Canon, Nikon, their businesses were already struggling. is the fact because of, like we were just saying, around these smartphones. Mm. You know, for most people now, the smartphone is the best camera they're going to ever have. The whole SLR mirrorless market is becoming more and more niche for those people that want to take their photography a little bit further, and that's just becoming a smaller and smaller market. Mm. I think Nikon's off their Z series offering their mirrorless cameras are actually beautiful. So I think they've got to pursue those lines and keep and making sure that they, like Canon are doing, making sure they've got the lenses available for that system, because I think it does have a future, but they have to go down that route.
Yes, it's interesting what's going to happen then if you say that. I mean, how the cameras are going to change and whether the phone companies are going to take over that space. It's going to take a long time for them coming to do that, or whether the space that Nikon, Fuji, Canon and Sony are in and Panasonic will just contract and a couple of companies will fall out of it.
I think it's already happened. I mean, you say take over. I mean, the camera market as a whole is already smartphones. You know, the professional market, or the, you know, the enthusiastic amateur is using digital SLRs and mirrorless cameras. The rest of the world is on smartphones already. Mm. You don't see, when you're out and about, you don't see people taking little compact cameras out to take pictures. They're using their phones.
Yeah.
So I think that market, Canon and Nikon, they've already lost it, in my opinion. Mm. They've got to concentrate now on what's left, which is providing for, you know, professional photographers and those enthusiastic photographers.
Who would have thought we'd be talking about Canon and Nikon in the niche market?
That's the way I see it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I look at myself amongst, you know, my body of friends and family. I'm the only one that has a pocket camera.
Yeah.
Everyone else is using a smartphone.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mean okay. People don't just take out their iPhones, they take out their iPads and then the other side to get to see a landmark, and there's a big iPad with a person standing there.
And it's the same you see it when you see it on concerts, isn't it? Now you see people doing concerts and they're all standing, and suddenly they put iPads up. So the people behind must be going absolutely berserk, you know, because you imagine how much field of view an iPad can take out of someone's eye line. So, you know,
iPad Pro, 12.9 inch.
And don't forget, with a magic keyboard, so you can hold it up.
Yeah, dangling down.
An expensive concert, that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's have a look at some of the new kit that's been highlighted. I know I've seen something about a great deal from Olympus, but let's have a look at the some Canon lenses you came across, Damien.
I'm just going to share my screen and bring it up and share, and here it is. So wow. There it is. It's a 700 millimeter Canon mega zoom that's a new optical design for their mirrorless cameras, and it's got a f of 4.5 to 7.1, so it would looks quite amazing for what it can do. And I heard that Ian said it'd be really appealing to those bird watchers out there to actually get up close. So that's a nice piece of kit. No price with it, but it does look really quite something else.
That's what
Ian thinks of it, and
that's two lenses there, isn't it? There's a 100-600 and then there's a 100-700. Is that right? I'm reading that.
Oh yes, there's two lenses there, yes.
Yeah. And this
I'll
just say that, and so this is part of their kit. You've got a 100-500 already been released, so this must be the way that they're looking at doing. But as you say, that's quite a 100-700 would be quite a zoom. Ian, you were going to say?
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused. If you look at the top of the article, it says Canon RF 120-700, and then it refers to it below as 100-700. So, but either way, I mean that is a massive zoom range, and starting at f4, that's a good starting point. And it down to f8 you know, it's not a huge amount of light, but you know, I shoot a lot of wildlife, and you want to, you know, when you get to that sort of focal length, you want some depth of field, so f8's not horrific. But this is what's really interesting about mirrorless, and this goes back to, you know, the Nikon discussion. This is what Canon are doing here. Is they're not just putting a mirrorless camera in the market and saying, well, you know, here's a great mirrorless camera. They're trying to take advantage of the advantages of mirrorless. And one of the biggest advantages of mirrorless is this, you know, wider mount and the closer distance to the sensor, which is, I believe, is called the flange distance. So by getting closer to the sensor, that's allowing these different lenses, which is just really interesting. I mean, I think, you know, if you're trying to compare this to Canon's digital SLR offering, you know, their super zoom would be the 100 to 400. So this is a massive difference in terms of focal length.
Okay. Because looking at the size of it there, what did that look like on the front of it? Was it a 72 or 85 mil filter? So that lens is quite small. If you think about a 700 mil lens, that you'd be looking at something like over 100 mil on the front element. So that gives
It would be massive. Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be something that you could. Certainly take some weight out of the kit bag. All that lens you're
carrying around. To get close to this on a SLR, you'd be looking at the Canon 600mm lens, f4 or f5.6. You're talking about 10 grand's worth of lens.
Yeah.
And a heavy piece of kit as well. Obviously, it's different in terms of aperture. I mean, that's letting a lot more light in, but yeah, this is interesting, very interesting.
I shouldn't think it'd be far short of 10 kilos, let alone 10 grand.
Yeah. How fast will the lens be? Because that would it appeal to sports photographers? Because if it's got the speed, it'd be interesting from that point of view.
Yeah, I think it's the versatility of it. I mean, it's a huge zoom range. It'll be interesting to see how good it is. I mean, you tend to find with these super zooms, the longer the range, you tend to find the quality not so good at either end.
Yeah.
So Canon might be trying to do too much here, at, you know, 120 to 700, because to achieve that, you tend to have more elements in the lens, and that's where you start to lose some of the image quality. So, yeah, it'd be interesting, but it's interesting to see what they're trying to do. And they're trying to do something different rather than just say, look, we do 100 to 400 mil for the SLR, we're going to do 100 to 400 mil for the mirrorless. You know, they're trying to do something different, which I think is good.
Yeah. So if you're going to make a transition, you're going to make it lock, stock and barrel and end up with a whole new range of kit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking as well, if you can use some of the older Canon lenses on the R cameras, but you need to put an adapter in, don't you?
Yeah, you've got to use an adapter, and that adapter is doing is replicating the flange distance from the SLR to the mirrors, if that makes sense. So all it's doing is placing the lens further away from the sensor, as if it was sat on a digital SLR camera. That's all they're trying to achieve.
So the focal point falls exactly on the image sensor, rather further back, yeah. But then again, that also has an effect on your f-stop, and it must also just adds weight to the camera. So, yeah, be interesting to see whether people transition from the current Canon DSLRs over to the R series.
Yeah, I think what Canon are missing at the moment is a cropped mirrorless camera. Like a 7 equivalent to a 7D Mark II, which they do in the SLR range at the minute. That's what they're missing, and I think that's what a lot of people are waiting for.
Right. Okay. My piece of news that I saw that really interested me. Let me see if I can call this up. Was in news this week about this new Olympus deal. And basically what they're saying is if you buy the three lenses, there's a 714, a 4150 and a 300, if you buy those three lenses and that comes to $5,799, you can choose from any of the new Olympus bodies, the OMD E Mark 1, the OMD Mark 1 or 3, and the OED E Mix. And some of them bodies are going out at up to $3,000 a time. So if you're thinking about a new kit, or you're in a position that you want to look at changing, we were talking earlier on about maybe going from a Nikon or Canon, this seems to be a pretty decent deal. Anyone had experience with Olympus cameras other than, I had an Olympus Trip, that's a long, long time ago, but I've not been an Olympus DSLR man at all. Anyone have any experience with it?
Is this part of Ian's philosophy that maybe there's a bit of a cutthroat price war going out there, that they're wanting to pull people into their brand, and by giving these amazing deals, they're pulling people in, because they're basically giving away the body. Well, they are giving away the body.
Of course, the only
there's two things with this. I think there's to try and sell free lenses. To me, they are trying to appeal to people that are either entering the market. And if you're investing that much money in lenses, you're probably not entering the market, or you're looking to switch systems, because that's the biggest thing. If you're a Canon shooter or a Nikon shooter and you own lenses, you're used to having a selection of different lenses. If you're going to switch systems, you still want that selection of lenses. So to me, this is appealing to people that are thinking about switching. Mm. And then the second thing I don't quite get is, you can choose a body. So why would you choose the Mark II and not the Mark III? It's strange.
Yeah, I suppose it may be a reservoir of kit they have in stock, and they've come up with this sales marketing thing to try and move some of that old stock that's sitting there.
Another camera waiting in the wings that they're waiting to bring in.
Possibly. Yeah, but I just thought the tagline was great: buy a lens and get a camera free. Right, okay. At this point, I'd just like to say a quick thank you to our sponsors, who make sure that the servers keep BTN running and we can do all these shows. The TSO hosts are a brilliant mob. They support us now for quite some time. I personally use their services for my websites, and I find them really, really helpful. Never a problem's too small or too big for them to deal with. And the other group is iMen Max, who are based in Birmingham and give you all the support you need for your Mac. So if you need anything to do with your Mac or any Apple products, please give them a shout. Right, one of the enjoyable bits about these format that we've been using for the last few weeks is the conversations we've been having between us all about the various different aspects of photography. A lot of information has been passed on, and some good advice, some great advice from some of the people we've had on here. But for today, we thought we'd look at the issue about photography in the current lockdown and the effect it's had on many people. Some of us, like me, it's given me time to actually take some photographs. It's, trying to get that in with a busy work schedule. Ian, with kids and all that as well added into it. Time to say, okay, I'm going to go and take 6 hours on my own to go and take some photographs. It just doesn't happen, does it? But now all of a sudden, we've got these 6 hours. So, and I know we've had some really interesting stuff in the Slack room about what you do. What you're limited to initially was what we could do around the house, which was proved some fantastic photographs came back, and then it was how do you then start taking that outside the house. So let's start with Damien. You've been doing some great work with both the bubble thing that we did, the bubble idea, and also you've been getting out and about with some wonderful photographs that we've seen.
I enjoyed, but it was surreal, the first part of the lockdown, and there was a lot of stories to be had in the local village where I live, where it went very quiet and there was lots of places getting boarded up, and it got quite depressing. And then there's another story as the places are getting quite excited about opening up, and you can see the boards coming down and lots of exciting signs, And I then also not only did that story, but I did stories of close-ups of the village and taking pictures of various aspects of it. So I enjoyed that. But then I also enjoyed what you and Ian started doing, is getting into different parts of the photography at home and looking at what they call the rabbit holes. And Dodsey, who's a member of our little team, and Ian started doing those lovely bubble pictures and the oil and water. And yes, it's been really interesting finding out other aspects of photography that I'd never really thought about getting involved in. But then, well, yeah, I'll leave Ian and you to come in there. Those are two aspects. The story of the lockdown itself is interesting, and how I recorded that, mainly from a blogging point of view and maybe from a history point of view, but also the new techniques have been really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, Ian, you got heavily into what it was described as going down a rabbit hole with the bubble photography. It was a simple concept, as always. It's always so simple, isn't it?
I think the reason I sort of brought the subject up as something to talk about is now that, some of the lockdowns being eased and we're allowed to go out, I'm in two minds as to whether I want to or need to. I think what lockdown has taught me is I've taken some of my favourite images recently, just indoors or in the local area. So as places now start to open up, we're in that awkward transition of where is it still quite right to go out, and do we need to go out? And then there's also, because I'm quite an outdoor person, I love the environment, do I need to get into a car and travel 20 miles and just to go and take some photographs and add to the carbon footprint, if you like? So I found the whole lockdown situation has changed my whole outlook on photography a little bit. Mm. And I've taken, like this one behind me, I've taken some of my favourite images have come from lockdown. And I never thought that possible at the start. I was pretty down about it all. I felt it as being, as being restricted, and I was going out for the daily exercises, and that was at the time that was primarily iPhone. I wasn't taking a camera with me. And now I'm doing the walking and taking a camera with me, but I'm not feeling a massive urge to get into a car and travel somewhere. No.
You had some issues with that, though, didn't you, Diamond? You were saying that, like we were talking about the poppy field. Had some issues there.
I was coming back to Ian. I saw Ian and I follow Ian, and you had got a little bit down, and yet I was really enjoying your photographs, and then suddenly you found the new abnormal, or the new normal, whatever we call it, and you'd really blossom because you've taken pictures of some of those tin works and tin mines, and I'm seeing new visions of how you've done the tin mines each time. And I'm sure that's the same tin mine, but each time you take a picture of it, it looks completely different to me. So that's been quite interesting for me to watch your own development on everything. But yes, I have gone back into Birmingham, and I went to Digbeth, where they do lots of street art there, and it was quiet, and I went into Birmingham to the canals to take some pictures there. And when I posed the pictures, a lot of people are interested. But I got a couple of people say, why did you venture? And was it right you going in there? And as you mentioned, was that the right thing to do? So that's a philosophical question, and both you and Martin may answer that. And then recently I found a poppy field nearby and went into there. And then there was the question of whether I do tell people where I'm going, because the amount of people that were clamoring to come along to that poppy field and know what the postcode of it was, so that they could take that dream picture as well.
Yeah.
So those are a bit of the downsides, maybe.
Well, it is the social distancing part of it, and our adherence to the guidelines, saying, okay, traveling a distance to take photographs, is that really necessary journey? Should we be doing stuff like that? But then on the other side of it, if it's part of your daily walk and you're just having the camera with you, then on that side of it, that's almost like a Cummings route excuse that, you know, you were already there, you were walking there, you had the camera with you. But I think it's it certainly seems to have generated an awful lot of more people making an effort and taking some really creative stuff, whether it's just for a funny blog or an item itself. But some of the stuff I've seen floating around is pretty impressive, pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, the guideline's pretty clear for me. I think, it's perfectly acceptable now to go out and travel and to go and do photography. My personal feeling on it is what the lockdown has taught me is I don't necessarily need to. And I'm sure there's going to come a point where I will want to venture further. But at the moment, just enjoying what's on my doorstep. And as I say, some of the images I've taken in the last few months are some of my favourite. So being forced to get out of my comfort zone a little bit, do something different and stay local, I've managed to appreciate things that maybe I've overlooked previously.
Well, the expression "what's in front of your nose" is sometimes perfectly adequate in this situation. You know, we haven't seen it, and it, when you're given in some cases, it's a nudge and a wink to okay, have a look at this, do something different. And as you say, maybe after the 1,000th bubble photograph, you might think, okay, I want to try and do something else. But I think I think there will be a massive pent up release though when we can get out further. And hopefully take some of the new skills we've learned and try that. You know, now, instead of the great big wide vistas that you typically take in, you might be now looking at that particular bud or flower on the beach or a shell or a stone in a completely different light.
Many people are saying, keep your photographs, because certainly I think it's in the University of Warwick. It's somewhere in Warwickshire. Someone set up a place and they ask you to send in your photographs as a record of the lockdown. So people are wanting the records, the social background to it all, and keeping so that future generations can see what we've been talking about today.
Yeah, one thing I did when the lockdown started, which I don't know what compelled me to do it, but I did it, and I'm glad I did it, is I started a COVID-19 album on my phone. And I... working in a supermarket, I started taking pictures of the empty shelves and stuff because it was astonishing at the time, but it's even more astonishing looking back at it now and having that record of it, in 10, 20 years' time, you know. And I said to people at the time, I said, to other photographers, I said, you want to try and capture some of what's happening at the moment because it's unique.
I look forward to that when you publish it.
Well, they were phone shots. They're nothing much to look at, but it was a bit of a record of time because it was just bizarre.
I think I found it interesting on VE Day the way that it was handled there. We had so many people. I asked for people to send in some photographs. We're trying to put together a small village video of it all, and some of the photographs that came back were excellent, really, really good. What you call street photography from people with some with cameras. Unfortunately, some were really bad, but there was also some really good stuff which caught the day really well. Which so that side of it has become more and more prevalent. I think people are working really hard on that.
Exciting, interesting times. Interesting times.
So, Damien, what if once we are allowed to get back to the new norm? What would be your first photographic expedition that you'd like to plan?
I'd like to see the sea, because I mean I see the canals all the time, but seeing Ian's photographs of the sea, that's what I'd like to see again.
Yeah, Ian. So you'd like to go into the city, would you, Ian?
No, Cadrivi probably. It'll be the coast for me, but I don't know if that'd be any time particularly soon. You see crowded beaches and stuff like that. It all just feels a little bit wrong at the minute. So, I'm not in any rush.
No, we're talking about maybe a trip to Scotland. We've got children and friends up there, so maybe a nice long weekend or a few days in Scotland would be a nice break and a good opportunity to bring the camera with us as well.
Definitely.
Okay, guys, thanks for that. I really appreciate all your comments there, and hopefully we'll we've been of interest to people who may be looking into watches at a later date. So Damien, where can we find you?
I'm on DamienWormsley.com or I'm on Damo or Damo on Instagram.
Okay. And Ian?
IanLewisPhoto.co.uk. All the links are there.
Okay, great. And you'll find me in the Slack room, Magic Man. Anytime you want to drop a DM or come and give us a comment, we'd be very welcome to see you. Okay, so normally I say at the end of the day, you know, safe journey home to everyone, but since we're all there, I don't have to worry. So have a great week. Enjoy yourselves and we'll see you all soon. Good night. Thanks all. Bye.
Good night. Thanks, guys.